Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN, and we have nothing but ball to talk with Christian Fowler at C Fowler BCM, senior writer and content creator at Bluff City Media. Christian, how are we doing, brother? How was your week one? Did you celebrate accordingly? Obviously Labor Day as well.
Yeah, no, it was perfect as it typically is. We had a great Saturday. It was tough to sleep on Friday night, I'm not going to lie. We had pretty much all the fellas over to the house. We had our fantasy draft Saturday night, which, unlike most people that do it on the phones and on the laptops now, we still do it like we've done it for the past, I think this is year 14 of our league. We still do it in person. We buy the board. We buy the stickers. We made Philly cheesesteaks, muffalettas. Like, we blew it out. We had a great Saturday. Watched ball from 11 to midnight, drafted on Saturday night. It was about as perfect as a opening college football weekend as we could have asked for.
Yep, no doubt about it. And we open it up with Ohio State, and we'll get to the Tiger game in a second. And that one, honestly, hate to say it, I was there, I had a great time. We'll wait till the end of this conversation for that. But we opened up with Texas and Ohio State, and Arch Manning's, you know, long-awaited first appearance is the full-time starter at Texas. And what does he do? 170 yards, one pick, one INT. And he missed a lot of guys. What were your sort of takeaways from Arch Manning against Ohio State in that 14-7 loss this weekend?
Unsurprising. If you listened to you and I talk about this last week on the show, we discussed the fact that this hype train was out of control, and that, yes, Arch Manning is a very talented player. He shares a last name with one of the best quarterbacks of all time in Peyton Manning and two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback in Eli Manning.
You didn't want to say one of the greatest for Eli?
No, not one of the greatest. And then also a grandfather who is, at bare minimum, a Saints legend in Archie Manning. So the hype was unreal. Texas preseason national championship favorite. Arch Manning preseason Heisman favorite, which is just completely overblown and unfair to him. And honestly, he looked like a first-time starting quarterback that was starting a game against the defending national champions on the road against Matt Patricia, who is a heck of a defense coordinator and a defense that, you know, features one of, if not the best player in the country in Caleb Downs, along with a lot of other talent on that side of the ball. So I think Matt Patricia did what someone with extreme defensive knowledge would do in that situation against a first-time starting quarterback, threw a lot of different looks at him, confused him, and really got his rhythm and his timing off from the beginning. And we saw a stretch late in the second half where it looked like Arch got into a rhythm and had a good drive where he led Texas down to bring it within a score. And then honestly had an opportunity on that last drive, made a beautiful, ridiculous throw to open the drive, kind of fitted in between the corner and the safety in a little cover two look. But then when it came down to the third and fourth down, he missed the second and third down, I guess. He missed two pretty easy throws that should have been a first down. The third down threw it behind Ryan Wingo, which, you know, he could have scored on that one. Honestly, there wasn't much out in front of him. But, yeah, it looked like a first-time starting quarterback. And you saw some flashes, but for the most part, he looked rattled, looked like he didn't have confidence, and looked like he was trying to do things that he didn't have to do, was trying to do too much at times, even though it, like Steve Sarkisian was really trying to take a lot of that pressure off of him. Specifically, I'm really disgusting that third down throw to Ryan Wingo. There was no
tried to sidearm it, flip it out there, Mahomes style.
Yeah, he could have just stepped into that throw, delivered it. It was just an easy wide open drag to your best receiver, and he kind of gets off platform, tries to sidearm it, tries to avoid getting hit, and he never looked great. And you have seen the internet just come down on him harder than I've probably ever seen them come down on a player, which. I get it. You know, people love to hate. We saw this with Shedeur Sanders. We've seen this with other quarterbacks in the past. And a lot of people have felt like Arch has been crowned before he ever really deserved it or earned it. And it doesn't help that every time that game goes to commercial, there are three commercials that feature Arch Manning,
right.
Which, once again, is just crazy in this era that that's where we're at. But I will say, like, all of that to say – it's not over. Like, you have people that are, you know, writing his death certificate already. I mean, this was a guy that, yes, he's in year three of college, but it was his first start in one of the most difficult environments you could ask someone to make their first start in. And we'll see how it plays out the rest of the season. I mean, Texas is still really talented. Their defense played very well in that game. They actually outgained Ohio State by a pretty substantial amount. But they just – it never felt like they had it offensively. It never felt like Sarkisian got into a groove. The play calling on the goal line stand was – you know, left a lot to be desired. It wasn't perfect, but I think if you're going to buy stock in Arch Manning, like now –
Yeah, buy it low.
Probably now is probably the lowest that it will get.
So yeah.
It was rough. It wasn't perfect. But at the end of the day, you look at it, he played very poorly – and they still only lost by 7 to the defending national champions, and they had a chance to at least tie the game at the end of it. So for all that it was, and for as ugly as it was, it's not like they went to Columbus and the doors got blown off of them. I think they'll regroup, and I think they'll be fine for the rest of the year.
And beyond talking about Arch, I think that's a damn good football team, even though
Agreed.
They lost. Like, that's the thing that I think people need to focus on. But with Arch, I think you highlighted it a little bit. But I'll even bring up, I think it was his second throw of the game. The one thing that really concerned me about Arch in that game, and you can look at, like, okay, you're in the shoe. It gets really loud there. The fans are bearing down on you. Stands are built directly straight up. It's one of the toughest environments in sports, in all of sports. But he was missing some just layups.
Yes, he
right?
was.
Right? And that's the thing that concerns me. You can make excuses for him. You can talk about the environment. You can talk about Matt Patricia screwing with his eyes and that defense, how good they are. But he was missing some plays that you just have to make if you're going to be considered the type of quarterback that he's considered already.
Yeah, and a lot of the times, like I said, with the third down throw to Ryan Wingo.
He was missing bad in certain situations. That second throw, it was a corner route to one of his receivers. And he short-armed it and basically underthrew him by, I don't know, my estimation, probably about 7 to 10 yards.
Yeah, and it was weird watching him throw the ball over the middle because you could tell Sark was trying to draw kind of these easy slants and digs and stuff across
right.
the middle where they were beating zone coverage. And it was like Arch was trying to throw missiles every single time and just didn't really show much touch on his throws. So it just, like I said, from the beginning, it just looked panicked and sped up and no comfortability whatsoever. So I completely agree with you. He missed a lot of easy throws, and people point to Sark and say, you know, the play calling wasn't the best. And maybe it wasn't. Maybe he could have opened it up a little more, whatever arguments you want to make. But he did give Arch a lot of opportunities to get into a rhythm early. There was a lot of missed throws on pretty simple stuff. Like I said, slants, digs, outs, hitches. It was a lot of close to the line of scrimmage, getting a rhythm, and then we'll see what happens. But it just – he couldn't hit them. He was trying to throw lasers. He was trying to throw off platform. It just – it didn't look right the entire time, without a doubt.
Yep. All right. Now, the biggest story of the weekend is Alabama goes down in game 1 against Florida State. And I'll be honest, based on – you know, the limited practice film and practice clips I got to see based on the reports coming out of each camp, I didn't even think this was a realistic possibility. Because I don't even think 31-17 tells the full story. Alabama was never really in that game. I guess at the end they could have cut it to they could have tied the ball game if they got a stop, but I never believed they were going to get a stop because their defense hadn't played well all day. But 31-17, Tommy Castellanos this offseason said Nick Saban can't save them, and that became true because Kalen DeBoer certainly did not save them. This is the stat that just blows my mind. And I know that following Nick Saban's it's the hardest job anyone's had in college football, quite frankly, ever. But in 235 games, yeah. Nick Saban had 4 unranked losses. Kalen DeBoer has 4-14.
Yeah.
And listen, I don't think Kalen DeBoer's a bad coach. He's a very good coach. Great coach, even, depending on which way you look at it. But what do you think went wrong or has gone wrong in his era so far?
I think really what it boils down to is what you started this with, and it's following Nick Saban. And it doesn't seem like it's really anything past that because they have the talent. And people want to talk about Ty Simpson, and that's fine. But with Caden Proctor and Parker Brailsford, and I know Jan Miller wasn't available for this game.
Sure, but their O-line, which is supposed to be the most talented and best in college football, and I even look at the guys they have and think that, and I'm an offensive line guy, they were horrible. They were bad, genuinely.
Jeremy Bernard, who actually had a good game on Saturday, Ryan Williams, I can't understand why they weren't able to get the ball in his hands.
Yeah, then he got the concussion, so that's going to be
And then he got the concussion later in the game. But it just – and you've seen this on social media, I'm sure everyone that's listening has. Like, you have people posting videos of, like, the Saban era and people being scared and having fear when Alabama came out there, and there isn't that right now.
Yeah.
Whatever that piece of the culture was, where you had people that were intimidating and you didn't want to go up against that defense because they had Rolando McClain's of the world, Reuben Foster's of the world.
Buddy, you could spend the rest of this 20 – you could spend the rest of this segment naming names.
Yeah, I could go through and name 100 players, but Jonathan Allen, De'Ron Payne, Quinnen Williams. I mean, the list goes on and on of guys that would strike fear into opponents, and you just don't have that. You don't have that intimidation factor. And it kind of felt like with Ty Simpson and this offensive line that they have, with the size that they have up front, that it was going to kind of go back to the beginning of the Saban era where they really leaned on the running game, game manager at quarterback who can make plays when needed and get the ball to Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams in big time moments. And on that first drive, I'm sure you watched as well, like they came out, I think they ran for like 60 yards on that drive straight.
Yep.
Straight into the end zone, and it felt like, okay, this is the game plan. This is the Bama this year that we're going to see, the hard-nosed, physical, beat you up front, out-physical you up front. And then that was it. After the first drive, it was over, and then Florida State set the tone, and Florida State bullied them on the offensive line and defensive line, pushed them around up front, which we're just not used to seeing with Alabama. So I just don't think they have that physicality that Alabama of the past has had. And people have pointed to, Kalen DeBoer, more of a high flying offensive attack kind of guy, coming over from Washington, way different than the SEC. Maybe he's not cut out for the SEC. And a lot of times I think that's overblown and quite frankly, just kind of BS. But at least so far in his first 14 games, it does not look like he's an SEC coach. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games.
Yep.
At Alabama.
That last part you brought up about him being that high flying offensive head coach, as opposed to Nick Saban, who was if he could win a game 7-3, he'd happily do it. I think the word that I would use here to describe my thoughts, and I've talked about this a little bit earlier, I think it's fit, man. And like as much as you bring up like following Saban and how hard that is to do, and now that Saban's not on the sideline, other teams don't fear them. I guess that's part of it, the intimidation factor. But I just think it's just not a very good fit right now. And I don't know what he can do to change that, to change my mind on that at this particular moment.
And here's the other question, right? Okay, so you got Kalen DeBoer. You got Ryan Grubb, who they've spent a ton of time together between Indiana and Washington. And obviously Michael Penix is kind of a common denominator there. But it was those high-powered, high-flying, vertical offenses. And, of course, you have to have the quarterback to do that. So if that is their style, that makes me question that as well. Are they trying to be an SEC style, like a quote-unquote SEC style old-school offense?
Have they not recruited how they've wanted to since they got into the door, too? That could be another question there. Because this team doesn't really have that. I mean, I guess they kind of do, but their offensive line's built more rugged and for the run game than it is for a you know, guy that's just going to drop back in the pocket every single time.
Absolutely.
And at the quarterback position, they don't have it yet until Keelan Russell takes over.
Right, if he stays after that.
Correct.
What's gonna, and could Alabama, could they turn it around and win 9 or 10 games this year? They could.
Sure.
Do I see that happening? At least off of week one, no. But I'm with you on the fit. I feel like it feels like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. But I do want to flip it. I want to talk about you were probably going here anyway.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Florida State and Mike. That's a hell of a first win. And then the Gus bus does it again to Alabama.
Yeah, if anybody can be an Alabama killer, it's Gus Malzahn. It's crazy because I heard this earlier. Gus Malzahn in his career against Alabama is 6-7, which if you just heard that on surface level, you'd go, that's a losing record that's not very good. But we know Alabama and what they've done over the last 20 years. So being 6-7, almost having a .500 record against Alabama is pretty much unheard of.
Well, and to do it again, though, now that it's a new head coach altogether, like all of that was against Saban, and this is seemingly a different program.
Yeah, and it was extremely impressive because the hopes for Florida State weren't very high this year. You had a lot of people overlooking them, saying in the ACC, it's Clemson and Miami. No one is talking about Florida State, even though they were undefeated 2 years ago and rolled over the majority of the teams that they played against. You had the stink of last year, I think, still hanging around. But I think what Mike Norvell has done and bringing in a guy like Castellanos, who has a ton of swag, like you said, he was talking in July about Nick Saban can't save them, and they have no way they can stop me. And so when you have the swag of a quarterback like that and also Gus Malzahn, I think he tweeted like right after the game, feels like old times or something like that. Like,
yep.
They have a swag to them. And we know, like, as people that are in Memphis and have seen Mike up close and personal, obviously you so more than many people around here, he's got that swagger also, and he's got that quiet confidence. And it was good to see them come out and get a win over a top-10 opponent, beat Alabama after last year because it was tough to watch. And I know most Memphis fans felt bad for Mike and were worried about if he would make it through it. But that team looked really good. They looked physical up front. Castellanos looked really good running the ball and throwing the ball, spreading the ball downfield, just the disguises that they had on offense. I watched something. I think it was about their opening drive when they scored on the reverse of the touch pass, whatever it was, and how Gus Malzahn set that up the whole drive and kept giving Alabama the motion. And then the pulling guards, and they were going, you know, had the defense flowing one way and then came back and scored the touchdown. So just with the creativity that Mike and Gus Malzahn can create together with a quarterback like Castellanos who can run, who can throw, with some pretty solid receivers, including Tennessee transfer Squirrel White, like that team was a lot of fun to watch, and they were physical. They were really physical defensively. Like even on
that was really what I noticed, because last year they were not. Even though they were tabbed to be, okay, Pete Thamel says before the first game against Georgia Tech in week zero, oh, this is the best defensive line in college football. And right. then you hear from Mike all last offseason, oh, this offensive line is super experienced. I expect a lot out of them this year. I guess I should have read the sort of the quiet, the silence this offseason from Florida State. I probably should have read that as a positive more than I did.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even on that first Alabama drive where they go down the field and score, Florida State made them earn it a little bit, but they were thumping. And I kind of noticed that early on. I was like, they're allowing some plays, they're allowing some yards, but they're flowing to the ball and they are hitting. Like they were being extremely physical even on that opening drive touchdown. So it was good to see them kind of, you know, get that rejuvenation in the program, because it felt like, was this a one-year wonder? Was it a flash in the pan? Did Jordan Travis spark all this? Like, is this not Mike? I think clearly it is. It didn't work out last year with DJ Ungalele. He was not the answer, and it looks like Castellanos is, at least for now. But I think what did they jump up to, 13 or 14 in the newest top 25 that came
out?
Yeah,
it's 14 immediately.
Yeah, so it looks like there's at least another competitor in the ACC, because, like I said, they were written off. It was a two-team race in the ACC, but Florida State's in the thick of the ACC race and the college football playoff talk, at least after 1 week.
Also in the ACC, the game on Sunday actually was very good. Miami versus Notre Dame. Miami ends up winning 27-24. They built a solid lead, right? I think they were up 21-7 at one point. Notre Dame comes back, ties it up. But here's Miami taking away, getting the field goal, winning the game. I think a lot has been said about Carson Beck, right? 20 for 30, 205, two touchdowns, no interceptions. And I think he's getting a whole lot of credit. I just want to ask you this. How much credit does he deserve for what Miami was able to do in beating number 6 in the country, Notre Dame?
I definitely think he deserves some, but probably not as much as he is getting. And I get why people are...
It's quarterback talk. We like making it like quarterback conversations become like one-on-ones. When we have team versus team, it's quarterback versus quarterback. It's just what we do
as
a society.
Absolutely. And... Yeah, I mean, and the story is cool too, right? Because you see the post game interview, he's crying after the game, talking about how he loves football again, and he found the love again. And it was a difficult year last year with being injured and just being much maligned because of his play. And so I understand the conversation. Was he flawless or perfect, or did he win this game necessarily for Miami? No, I thought the play calling was great. I thought he made some plays here and there. I think he looked more like the 2023 Carson Beck than the 2024 Carson Beck for the most part. But I don't think he looked like anything special. And you pointed out, like, people like Paul Feinbaum saying that Miami can go to the national championship with Carson Beck playing like this. I don't think he did anything special. I think if Mario Cristobal doesn't turtle up in this game, like he's kind of come notorious for doing, then he probably could have had a more impressive stat line. They probably could have beat Notre Dame a little bit more handily. But I don't think all the praise belongs on Carson Beck. This defense looked much improved. I hope people haven't forgotten already just how terrible they were last year. I mean, Cam Ward was really, really having to win this team games. Like Pitt, they lose to Syracuse. They play really close to Pitt. So many shootouts they had last year because the secondary in particular was horrible. But the defense looked much better this year. And I think they'll be really good. I think Miami's a really good football team. They're really sound up front. Their offensive line's really good. But I don't think it's a case of this team will go as far as Carson.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And Beck can carry them. I think he can hinder them, but I don't necessarily think he can make them the best team in the country either.
I look back at one play in that game when he throws up just a prayer ball and CJ Daniels comes down with it, transfer from LSU, and it was an unreasonably good catch. Like,
yes.
I still don't know how he brought that in. And I mean, CJ Daniels, he's had a nice career in college football. Didn't really pan out how it should have at LSU after he left Liberty, but it looks like he's got a nice little home there in Miami. But I feel like Georgia fans got flashbacks watching that play.
Yeah.
Right, where he gets, whenever he gets pressure directly in his face, he freaks out and just tries to throw it up to Culler, basically. That's what he tries to do. And he was successful, I guess, in doing that, but it took a monumental effort from C.J. Daniels. And I think more often than not last year, those types of plays became picks for Georgia. He still has that in him. That's the point I want to make to people. If that play goes like it did at Georgia last year, becomes a pick or an incompletion, we're talking about his performance a whole lot different today. Last couple of things for you. Memphis beats Chattanooga 45-10. At Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. My 2014 team was there to release the Tigers. That was a good time. I'll just let you know before you even have to ask. I had a very good time on Saturday. I did. I was a little slow on Sunday. You can just ask my family. But Brennan Lewis, 22 for 28, 199, 1 TD, 1 INT. The INT was bad, but then he also ran the ball 10 for 81 and a touchdown. Four different Tigers scored touchdowns on the ground. They finished 33 for 233, a 7.1 average rushing the football. And then defensively, there was a pick six. They had a couple of sacks. They seemed to be engaged and ready to go. But again, it's Chattanooga. Do you have any takeaways from this game in particular?
I mean, it's take care of business, right? I mean, you play an FCS opponent. You line it up, knock it down. Didn't allow a touchdown until in the fourth quarter. It was 45-3 before Chattanooga finally scored, or what was 38-3, I think.
Yeah, it was 38-3. Then they scored. Then the Tigers were like, all right, we need to make this look a little bit better, 45.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was business, right? It was just taking care of what's in front of you. You're not going to impress anybody whether you win by 35 or 60. It doesn't matter in a game like that. You just got to win and look relatively impressive doing so. But I think I think what you and I have talked about for the last month or so is pretty much what this was. They kept things close to the line of scrimmage for the most part with the passing game, gave Brennan Lewis a lot of easy throws, and leaned on the running game. And that's going to be the recipe for this team this year. I know Greg Rosier got banged up in this game. Hopefully he'll be back relatively soon, but you still got Frank Pleasant and Sutton Smith, who both scored in this game and looked good. Brendan Lewis, 81 rushing yards, the most by a Memphis quarterback since 2011. So they do have that threat now that we've alluded to for much of the offseason. And defensively, they look locked in. I think it was 10 tackles for loss that they had, a couple sacks. DeMarco Ward had the pick six. Sam Brumfield had a sack. So they looked good defensively. How much can you take away from it? I don't really know.
Right.
But at least they were able to get behind the line of scrimmage, make plays back there. It's something that we've had a concern about, and that won't be answered, until there's some more quality opponents. But when you look around the American specifically right now, or just in the group of four specifically, I guess right now, you know, we talked about UNLV and Boise State and some of these teams. They didn't look good. Boise State got their doors blown off.
UNLV had a bit of a bounce back, I guess, against Sam Houston, but it's Sam Houston.
Yeah, it's Sam Houston. So when you look around the American, Memphis is still, or group of four American, however you want to break it down, Memphis is still up there. When you look at the American, Navy rolled 52-7, but once again, the opponent kind of doesn't tell you much there. Tulane had a really impressive performance against Northwestern. Jake Retzlaff looked good, but overall, who knows? I mean, we haven't seen these teams play quality opponents, but they took care of business, and that's really all that matters. I think we still have some receiver questions after that game, but I think this is going to be a heavy running team this year for Memphis.
Yeah, and I know who's not going to be around. Army lost their first game to Tarleton State in double overtime, 30-27. Yuck! That's what happens when you have to replace the best quarterback in school history. I think that's what we're looking at. All right, now final thing. Micah Parsons is a Packer. Holler at me.
Let me paint you a picture on this one. So I had just gotten home from work. I was on the stationary bike out of the garage getting a little workout in, and my watch kept buzzing, and I was like, "What? Who is somebody trying to call me? Get a hold of me? What's going on?" I look down. I've got like six Twitter notifications, six ESPN and Bleacher Report notifications that Micah Parsons is no longer a Cowboy. So I didn't really expect this. And I mean, we've had extensive conversations about it. Like, they're going to pay him. It's just kind of what they do. But obviously, he pissed Jerry off enough that he was willing to let go of him. And I wish there would have been more as far as the return goes. I like the addition of Kenny Clark. Obviously, he's not a Micah Parsons.
Appreciate you, dude. That's great analysis. I love that.
If you didn't know, Kenny Clark is not as much of a game wrecker as Micah Parsons. But Dallas has been terrible against the run the last several years, and they've really lacked on the defensive tackle. You know, at the defensive tackle position. So it was a position of need. It's not Micah Parsons, but at least
sure.
You got some run support.
I don't like that because it's Micah was probably your best run defender up front.
Absolutely.
So it's like you added a decent run defender in the middle, but you got rid of your best one.
No, Micah's horrible against the run. I
don't know if we could call him terrible. And he can get into the backfield. He's a TFL getter. I don't know if like every down setting the edge. Yes, he has trouble with that at times.
Yeah, he's not a good run defender, and that's he's a wonderful player. Like I'm not that guy that's like okay with addition by subtraction. He is the best pass rusher in the league. He is the best at getting to the quarterback, but he's not a good run defender. I think he was 85th among defensive ends last year in run grade. So not good against the run. But to get Kenny Clark, who's past his prime, might still have a couple of years left as a solid defensive tackle, but not a game wrecker, and two first-round picks that will probably be more like second-round picks because the Packers are probably one of the best four or five teams in the league, and they already were good before this trade. Like, I just wish you could have gotten more, like a second, a fifth, two first in Kenny Clark. I feel a little bit better about, but it's tough. I mean, they paid him $47 million a year, so you look at it and go, okay, how do you pay Dak 60, Micah 47, and CD 35 and be competitive anywhere else? But at the same time, with these first-round picks, with your own first-round picks, what are the odds you get a player of Micah Parsons' caliber? Very, very low. So it sucks. It's hard to watch, but at the end of the day, like, we couldn't win a Super Bowl with Micah. it's not like we were going to win a Super Bowl with Micah either way. So it is what it is. It's kind of par for the course.
Honestly, this is what I expected to a certain extent. It's a bit of a fan take because you don't want to just completely, put yourself through hell. I feel like that's where you're at right now.
You can't. I can't sit there and be like, we just traded a generational pass rusher for two second round picks.
Although his injury is a little bit sketchy, I will say. An epidural maybe on the way. We'll see how that works out. Maybe Jerry knew something about that we didn't.
He didn't.
He didn't. Yeah, no, he didn't. Don't give him that much credit.
He was trying to pay him. I mean, from everything that came out today, I think it was what's his name for ESPN? I think it's Jordan Fowler.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
His name, but he came out with a big piece today, and he had talked to people
from Jeremy Fowler.
There you go. And he had talked to people from every side, and was like, the Cowboys had more guaranteed money on the table than the Packers. They were north of $150 million guaranteed. He got $136 million guaranteed from the Packers. Now, obviously, there was another year added on. It was a 5-year deal instead of a 4-year deal. But clearly, they wanted him, and they were willing to offer a lot of money. I think it was $41 million a year. or $42 million a year that they offered for him. So it's not like Jerry just pulled the offer. I mean, the offer was on the table. They just wanted less years and more money, and he wasn't doing that. So no, this isn't a pull the curtain over your face move, and we never wanted him in the first place because there was a monster deal on the table. It went south.
For sure. Well, Christian, great stuff, man. Great stuff. We've gone too long. I'll let you roll, and we'll talk next week.
Yes, sir. See y'all back next week.
Yes, sir. He is Christian Fowler at CFowlerBCM, senior writer and content creator for Bluff City Media. Check out our podcast, On the Bluff, releases every single Tuesday at 10 a.m. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. We'll come back and hop into the Blitz right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.